Hello, this is Steven, speaking to you from February of 2024. The current episode was originally recorded on April 24th of 2020, during COVID lockdown. It was also the first episode we recorded remotely, so you will definitely hear a change in audio quality. Just so you know. Enjoy! Hello, and welcome to Sci-Fi!
Sci-Fi?
Sci-Fi.
Yes, Sci-Fi, 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 a podcast in which three mysterious men talk about and review audiobooks.
Because they're awesome.
And there's nothing else to do because we're all stuck inside.
Oh, there's lots to do. I'm just avoiding it.
Yes, and we are, as they say, back from outer space. We have been gone for a little while, but time is an illusion.
Is that because we're now stuck in inner space? Because we're all sheltering in place?
So we're stuck in a Martin Short, Dennis Quaid movie.
Maybe. Which one?
Oh, inner space?
And yes, we're all a little loopy.
More than a little, yes. So anyway, how's everybody doing today?
Awesome.
Yeah.
Great. Yay. Well, that's enough of that. So, Barry, this is your choice. What are we reading this week?
The City in the Middle of the Night by Charlie Jane Anders.
And is it a novelized version of the Billy Joel song In the Middle of the Night?
I don't think so, but it might be related to some D&D module that we once read.
Oh, okay.
No, it's not. Just the name is similar.
Oh, nouns, verbs.
Yeah. It has city and something about night in it.
Right.
Is there an adjective in there? Middle?
No, there are no adjectives whatsoever. Anyway, adverb. Barry, would you grace us with a reading from the back of the book, please?
The back of the book says, if you control our sleep, then you can own our dreams. And from there, it's easy to control our entire lives. That's in quotes. I don't know who read that. That's from the back of the book. January is a dying planet, divided between a permanently frozen darkness on one side and blazing, endless sunshine on the other. Humanity clings to life, spread across two archaic cities built in the sliver of habitable dusk. But life inside the cities is just as dangerous as the uninhabitable wastelands outside. Sophie, a student and reluctant revolutionary, is supposed to be dead, after being exiled into the night. Saved only by forming an unusual bond with the enigmatic beast who roamed the ice, Sophie vows to stay hidden from the world, hoping she can heal. But fate has other plans, and Sophie's ensuing odyssey and ragtag family she finds will change the entire world.
All right, so what did everybody think? Kevin?
I'm neutral. Or actually, I think is it chaotic neutral? I'm not sure.
Thank you for expressing your character, class. What did you think of the book?
Oh, I was confused there. I was kind of disappointed in the sense that I actually liked the other book that we read, and this one was just kind of just okay.
You mean All the Birds in the Sky?
Yeah. At least in retrospect, if I go back and listen to the episode, maybe I hated it. I don't know. But
you're doing great. By the way, this is our first episode, if you hadn't noticed, for about a year, more, almost 2 years. So yeah, we're doing great.
It was a book that subject-wise I wanted to like, but it just kind of mostly bugged me. There were things that I did like, which we can get into later, but some of the science and species stuff was interesting.
Okay.
But the things I didn't like was there was a whole lot of unfriendly friend stuff. It's like kind of uncomfortable. And just a lot of like not being able to, like, you know, of one of the main characters to communicate what they wanted and sort of, I mean, I'm sure this is based on reality, but, you know, trying to say something that you can't quite get out, but then the other person doesn't actually let you say what you're trying to say.
That never happens in real life.
Yeah. Wait, I don't know.
Like that, isn't that like that Kanye West meme? I'm going to let you talk, but first I'm going to talk over you.
Isn't that like this podcast?
Yes.
Well, that too.
It wasn't the tone that I really needed in the lockdown, I guess, is what it kind of boils down to.
Yeah, Charlie Jane Anders really should have written a happier thing for us to read during the lockdown.
I know. I totally blame that person for this result.
Okay. Best episode ever. Barry, what did you think of the book?
I believe my first reaction was, quote, well, that happened, end quote.
This is going to be another of our specials.
Yes. You know, there were bits and pieces that I really liked. Like, there were some, like, fantastic world-building elements that I got like totally hooked into, and then it just kind of wandered away from a lot of them. So I don't know if that's a function of more me than book or what's going on there, but you know, things like Milk and Gin, that sounds awesome after thinking about it for quite a while.
I actually did some research on Milk and Gin. It's apparently it's now a stereotypical old man drink that's coming back.
It's like saying okay boomer or something, or
I have no idea. But, you know, my first thought was, wouldn't that curdle? And then I learned, well, no, it's called a White Russian, really, if you add more stuff to it.
Yeah. My first reaction to Milk and Gin was like, wow, that sounds truly disgusting. And, you know, and then I thought about like, well, there's eggnog.
So this is the Milk and Gin cast.
Yes. And then there was, you know, obviously, as you just said, the White Russian. And I'm like, I really like White Russians. Well,
we don't want to spoil people on the amazing powers of Milk and Gin. So we'll save that for our discussion section. So, okay. Sounded like...
I had a lukewarm reaction to the book.
Yes. Which is ironic since it's so cold, man.
Oh, God.
Well, one part of January is really hot.
I will tell you, I didn't read the back of the book like normal, and I never quite got that that's what the case was in the book. Like from the entire book, I didn't actually get that they were on the dividing line between dark and light.
So, Stephen, what did you think?
I thought it was pretty good. I'll admit that, yes, my expectations maybe were a little high because of advanced reviews that basically said, you know, just let this anywhere near your head and it will change your life for the better or something like that. And maybe that was...
That's true of oxygen anyway.
No, oxygen has been gradually destroying us all for a long time. I intend to eliminate it, but...
Is it oxidizing you slowly?
Increasingly less slowly. I liked the sort of feel of it, although... It was sort of strange. In the beginning, it took me a while to sort of understand that this wasn't on Earth, that this wasn't just a particularly hectic Midwestern college of kind that I've visited several of. I mean, you know, this a lot of the beginning could have taken place in a Midwestern college. But overall, I liked the depth of the characters. I found it a little bit... uncomfortable. I agree that some of the characters had interpersonal difficulties and there's a lot of problems in communication, but I'm not sure that anybody is a straight up hero. I'm not entirely clear on whether our main character is supposed to be a hero or not. And we can discuss that in the discussion section. My biggest problem was I thought that the book just kind of ended. And that's always sort of a strike against in my mind, the point where you sort of think, oh, how are they going to resolve all of these plot lines? And they don't. It's just like she was in the middle of conversation with somebody and then the book ended. So, you know, I'm glad we don't have a rating system because I'm really not sure how to rate this book.
Yeah, the sudden ending was kind of sudden for me, too. It was kind of jarring. I mean, I knew it was coming because I was the last one to finish the book. And I kept looking at it going... it doesn't seem like it's anywhere near the end of the book and there's 3 minutes left. Like
that's about where I decided that there wasn't going to be a great ending either. It's like 3 minutes left and there seems like there's a lot of stuff to wrap up.
On the upside, there wasn't a like mid-sentence and then part two coming next. Like,
yes.
It didn't end with a snow globe.
But anyway, all awesome. Part of the discussion section. Discussion.
That's right. Don't we have a segue?
Well, we barely even have a scooter. Let's see.
Wow. TM.
Let me think here. Okay, so now it's time for us to be exposed in the night and I'll become daylight sick. Until then, we are Sci-Fi.
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 And welcome back. So this is our discussion section where we have a full and wide-ranging discussion of everything that's in the book. So if you don't want spoilers, don't worry. I don't think we remember the book anyway, but...
a little bit of it.
If you don't want spoilers, this is probably something to avoid.
I remember the parts that I liked.
Well, that's good. Anyway, one of the things that we were talking about is the harshness of friendships in this book. It's built around a sort of intense friendship slash crush slash love affair between these two main characters. And it seems to me like it's basically one person that is severely crushing on the other and the other one that is just being manipulative. What do you guys think?
That seems pretty accurate. Even the object of desire is constantly like pushing back all the time in oftentimes mean ways.
Mostly, yes. And actually, I mean, at the very end, she claims that she loves the other one, but I think we see that's probably not the case, especially when they have the consciousness playback reveal thing. And she sort of like recoils from it. And like, you don't know how much of that is real recoil and how much of it is like, oh, this could be a political bad thing.
Right. Exactly. Well, I mean, it seems like we have Sophie, our main character, who is in love with Bianca. First, Bianca regards Sophie as, you know, kind of a nice to have around as far as we can tell. Then when Sophie is apparently killed, Bianca seems to think of her in this way, overly idealized way, and sort of remakes herself into this political figure to try to avenge her death. But of course, once Sophie reappears, she's really disappointed with the person that actually exists.
Yeah, like I was saying before, I didn't really like the amount of uncomfortableness throughout the entire book. And it's not like I wanted to like go into some happy La La Land or something. It was just like a large amount of the interactions were uncomfortable, especially the parts where, you know, I guess not even the interaction, but like, you know, Sophie is, you know, she basically throws herself on the grenade, right? She thinks that, you know, Bianca's stolen like a dollar's worth of food money or something.
Yeah, the food credits, right? That was that pivotal moment.
And like, Sophie's like, oh my God, she's going to be like a great leader and this is going to ruin her life. So she like steals the money out of Bianca's pocket and then they find Donner. So instead of like bringing her downtown to throw her in jail, they basically kill her, or they try to. They think they killed her. They throw her, you know, into the night. That's when we visit the Happy Gellert land. But yeah, then when she comes back from that, though, she's like so traumatized that she can't actually even bring herself to come and say anything to her for, I didn't think it was that long, but I guess it was long enough for Bianca to basically become a revolutionary. So I guess it was longer than I thought.
Well, and I'll admit that that was something that I was having a problem with initially. It was just like, this is a sitcom plot. You know, you're following her around the city and she just doesn't even seem to notice you wherever you are. And you just can't be bothered to at least, you know, drop her a note saying, yes, I'm alive.
Does email not exist in the future?
Well, I mean, it is sort of a totalitarian regime. At least that's the idea that I got. So maybe it would be actually difficult for her to do that and stay hidden, although she wasn't really working that hard to hide as far as I could tell. So,
well, anytime that she came near any place where she thought like the cops would see her, she sort of had a meltdown. I mean, I could understand if you were almost killed why you would be concerned.
I once spent a night in jail, and for a little while after that, yeah, I would get the vapors any time that I would see anything that might remind me of that. So, yeah, no, I understand it from a character point of view. From a plot point of view, I'm not even saying it's bad. I'm saying it was kind of putting me on edge, which may have been the goal.
Right. I mean, I actually will say that that's, if I even find that I hate a character, I have to give the author credit because they're actually eliciting some kind of emotional response.
Yeah,
exactly.
You empathize with the character in at least some way, even if it's not like a positive manner.
Right. Cause sometimes I'm like, God, I hate this book. And then you realize, wow, I'm actually hating the character. So I'm invested in it to some degree. Like,
right now, communication and miscommunication are a major theme in this book. And it's always dangerous to have a theme of miscommunication in a book because sometimes bad writers, and I'm not saying that this is happening. I am absolutely not saying that this is happening in this case. We'll say, oh, no, it's not bad writing. It's themes of miscommunication. But I actually think that in this case, they are sustainable themes. Obviously, Sophie and Bianca can just never quite click. In the end, it requires surgical intervention where Sophie can actually like meld with people's minds. And even then, she can't really communicate with Bianca because Bianca seems to be too wrapped up in herself. And I forget, she does do a mind transfer with Bianca. And of course, Bianca gets weirded out because of Sophie's obvious physical attraction to her. And it's just like, you didn't even notice that before? But
I mean, yes, it made it more realistic, but also kind of bugged me that the entire time that they've known each other, apparently Sophie's like never been able to express herself to Bianca. So it's not necessarily unrealistic. It's just like I was saying.
It does happen.
It's uncomfortable.
Yes.
And so I'm like, it's not like I'm like, ooh, I'm so glad I'm listening to this like really uncomfortable emotional situation right now.
This book made us feel bad and scary feelings and we are upset.
I mean, it's clear. It's pretty clear that Sophie and Bianca have two very different emotional quotients, right?
Right.
You know, in one way, you know, one really actually seems more like a something of a sociopath than anything else.
Yes. And it takes a while to figure that out because at first we're seeing her through Sophie's eyes.
Right.
She really seems to be this sort of glittering figure. And at first I just thought, oh, okay, so she's just hetero and Sophie doesn't want to accept that. You know, she would date these boys, but it always seemed like the boys were just a means to an end as well. So yeah. I'm not really sure that the difference between the two of them was sexual. I think it was in terms of how they saw relationships. Like Sophie was always saying, oh, yeah, no, you should have a relationship. It's good for you.
Yeah, I remember that. You know, it's more like, you know, what am I going to get out of this versus, you know, what are we going to get out of this?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the irony is that Sophie actually has better communications with these completely alien creatures that live out on the ice that she actually couldn't talk back to for a long time. She had a better relationship with Rose, who was the gillet slash crocodile that rescued her when she was originally put on the ice. Yeah, I think it's a legit theme. Like everything, I'm not sure how much I liked it, but I thought it was well enough done. Which leads us to our friends the Gellet, also known as the Crocodiles. What did we think of them?
Were they basically like the, you know, native Januarians?
Yeah, I think so.
So once again, humanity has gone to another planet and basically kicked off the original inhabitants.
It's kind of what we do.
Okay, just making sure.
Yeah.
Expectations are met.
I mean, I thought that was one of the more interesting parts of the book is that it's a creature that lives essentially in volcanoes or something like that. It's like they don't have sight, but they have other weird senses that can be translated to when they could do these mind melds basically with Sophie.
Right. One of the things that I liked about them was they were talking about they had like this entire governmental system, which was based on this one leader that it turned out had died a long time ago, but their memory had been passed down again and again and again. It didn't really matter that this person wasn't alive anymore, that just everybody knew exactly how that person would deal with things.
That's right. Like, well, like she actually had this, you know, what I would say hallucination where she thought that the leader had come over and said something to her or pat her on their head or something. And it turned out that was just sort of like a sense memory.
Right.
And yeah, it was in some ways, it's not like really a genetic memory. It's more of like a, you know, a passed down memory, but it's much more vivid. I thought it was a very interesting take on something like that.
Yeah. I mean, they had like essentially like a Borg like consciousness, and it was a little unclear as to how it worked. Cause it wasn't like magical or anything. I don't think they had tech to do it. I think it was just like, you know, some kind of your memories can be passed along in some way.
Well, they had tentacles,
pseudopods.
Exactly. So what did we think about the main city that they started out living in?
I really liked it. It was actually part of the book I really liked was hearing about how the city functioned and, you know, because it's sort of straddling that day-night border or something, you know, they had this complex series of shutters that would open and close to heat different parts of the city and things like that. And, you know, people structured their daily routines around, you know, the pattern of the shutters.
Yes, that's something that actually could have some utility coming forward for our daily lives. They sort of told time by, oh, the shutter would open and then this other thing would have to happen and this other thing would have to happen. And then they could go to this particular shop and buy with a thing that they wanted.
Right.
They didn't necessarily have a standard sense of linear time. It was sort of like the end of a long Rube Goldberg set of cause and effect.
I was confused about which city that was, though.
The first city. That's what I'm calling it.
Okay.
I can't remember the name either, so.
The time-based city.
I think it was Ziospont. Let me...
Ziospont.
Yeah, that
sounds right.
Because, yeah, they spoke Ziosponti, which was this very carefully formalized language. And I thought that the world building there was actually very nicely done.
Yeah, I agree. I really enjoyed that part of it. And then, you know, it's like, you know, you were talking about the Rube Goldberg machine. It was sort of, you know, to me, it was like, you know, there was sort of that flashback to the story of like someone decided to make like a an adjustment to, you know, how close the crops were to the sun, right? And you had to release the right amount of water so things didn't get burnt and only open the shutters so far. And then because they moved the actual crops closer, that all the plants burst into flames. And isn't that how, was it Sophie's mom like saved everybody or something?
No.
Yes, I think you're right. I don't remember very well, though.
It was very early on in the book. I remember that.
Exactly. All right. Aside from stuff we've talked about already, do we have any favorite scenes?
The one image that kind of stands out is like the description of that weird plant that like lived through all the volcano cores or something that and ended up getting killed. And I don't even remember the details of it that well, but just it was a kind of an interesting image of like this giant like communal plant or something with all, that lived in the volcanoes.
Okay. All right. And moving on to our usual questions. Do you think that the world building in the book would make it a good RPG or Dungeons and Dragons or a computer game?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that this would actually work quite nicely to be a role-playing setting.
Sorry, I could totally imagine like having like a setting somewhere for, you know, like a D&D game or something, and you know, because there's good chances of, you know, killing the characters and they have to make sure that they avoid certain parts of the city at certain times and built-in resource limiting by, you know, only having certain shops open at certain times.
Yep.
Yeah, and the travel between cities and outside to the, like, the areas that the, what was that place called? The community or something? The nomads, I forget.
Right. I don't
recall.
Wasn't
that like the Snowpiercer, you know, travel train?
Well, that they would go to different, you know, the different remote parts of things, like to the volcano and everything. But
oh yeah.
Yeah, I think for me, when I find my brain automatically going into the, oh, I wonder how you would like, you know, codify this in a rule set or something, then like I know that's triggered like a, well, there's at least one positive column check, you know, for the book. Like, so I did have that for this book at one point. It wasn't like the whole book, but it happened a few times.
Exactly. Okay. Now, was there tea? I don't remember any tea, but I feel like almost certainly there was some.
There certainly was like a prodigious numbers of beverages.
Well, yes. There was, of course, the, what is it? Milk and gin?
Milk and gin. There was some other.
And also, to be fair, they explicitly said that milk and gin was disgusting towards the end of the book.
No, I must have missed that.
Well, at least one of the characters. And they did have other alcoholic and non-alcoholic drinks and non-drinks. There was some kind of like alcoholic porridge or something, I thought. Like some
letters
milk or
and
something.
Non-drinks.
Well, alcoholic non-drinks, which is more uncommon.
It's not quite whiskey and rye, it's whiskey and oatmeal.
It's like we have Mutter's Milk or whatever, but
then which character would you want to be and or who would you be?
None of them.
I think I'd want to be one of the aliens on the ice. I think I'd want to be one of the Gellet. They seemed pretty cool.
Maybe one of the initial colonists.
All right. Anything else we wanted to talk about?
Welcome back, everybody.
Yes.
Yes. Huzzah. Yeah, I was going to say another thing I liked about the book was just the whole alien memory thing.
Yes.
Well, just because they went a little bit into like when they did their surgical modification to turn her into like a half, you know, alien Gellet. It kind of reminded me of
half
this
Gellet,
old
yeah.
Episode of Outer Limits where they... This guy
breaks his glasses.
Yes, that was Twilight Zone. There's an episode of Outer Limits where like they decided in order to sort of like bring all the governments together and to be like a world government, they had to sort of like scare them into doing it. So they were going to make an alien invasion.
This would make a great sort of comic book movie.
Isn't that the one where when people died that, you know, basically the aliens would inhabit their bodies?
No, it's like they surgically altered this guy to basically he could only breathe like methane and all this stuff. And so they did all these like crazy things so that when the scientists, you know, had the space capsule that would land from orbit, they would look at it and say, oh, it's not human. Obviously it's some totally weird alien race. And then they would freak out. And then of course I think the it crash lands like on entry or something.
This so sounds like
it was uplifting also.
I mean, yeah, wasn't this Watchmen?
Which the HBO one or the movie?
The comic book.
Are you saying that they stole it from an Outer Limits episode?
Yes.
I'm willing to believe that. Most things are stolen from an Outer Limits episode.
More things than you might think. Anyway, okay. Anything else?
Kevin has a cat. I have a light bulb.
All right. Well, then, it looks to me like the shutters are all closing or opening. I forget which way it
goes
on this.
Quick to the salon.
So it is time for us. Quick to the salon. No salons for us. I'm sorry. So until next time, we have been the SF3 Podcast, otherwise known as Sci-Fi.
Sci-Fi.
Sci-Fi.